Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We're doing things a little bit differently today as I welcome not one, but two guests on the show, a first for Racing Lives. And so my guests today are both racing drivers. They're both podium finishers. One is a Formula Renault champion and has scored points in pretty much every series or championship she's ever taken part in. The other is going from strength to strength, having just been announced as a fully fledged member of the Alpine Academy and will be racing in the inaugural F1 Academy series this year. I've had the pleasure of sharing grounds with them both while at Enstone, where they train regularly, and at F1 races, which both attend often as part of their various roles within motorsport. They've done a lot of firsts in their lives, and I'm thrilled that I get to share this Racing Lives first with them. Two guests, 1 hour-ish. Let's see how we get on. My guests today are Alice Powell and Abby Pulling.
Whee!
Yay, welcome!
Yay, that's a good intro!
Alice and Abby, when and where did your racing life begin?
Do you want to start? Where am I starting?
Well, we're going to have two. We've had a discussion before we come on that we did some filming yesterday, and because I answered everything first, I took all of Abby's answers. But as you reminded us, our stories, hopefully we don't have the same lives. So you can go first, and I'll see if I have the same story as you, which I definitely don't think I will.
Well, you did start racing at the age of 8, which I did. But yeah, so I basically got into motorsport through my family. My dad, he was two wheels. I loved the MotoGP, didn't really understand that there was more to life than go-karts and motorbikes until I was probably 10 years old. But yeah, I went along to his races and yeah, supported him from probably like the age of 3. And then at the age of 8, I got my own go-kart. Thank you very much, Dad. And yeah, I kind of went from there, really.
My story is exactly the same as Abby's. So I just love motorsport from such a young age. So none of my family were racers or were involved in motorsport at all. My mum used to say that when she turned on the TV and motorsport was on, I would stop being a pain in the ass, basically, and stop crying or whining, whatever I was doing, and just sit and watch the racing. So I took a keen interest in Michael Schumacher. He was my hero growing up. I wanted to basically be Schumacher. You know, I'd be riding around destroying my parents' garden on my little push bike, pretending to be Schumacher.
You were an annoying child.
My mum at one point thought I had ADHD. So, I then went karting at the age of 8 and then sort of went through the ranks of karting and then into cars when I was about 15. And here we are today.
So clearly you both grew up with motorsport, whether by choice or, you know, whether because of family connections. Could you recall your absolute first memory of it? Do you have one? Do you know?
You're laughing. So that clearly means that you do.
So my dad used to race in stock rods, it's like dirt ovals in England. And my first memory, it was like when the banger racing was happening. Or something linked to it. I mean, I was so young and I have no clue really, but I remember holding my little sprinkler, like the little firework thing, and there's like caravan, like this isn't what my dad was racing, but we're watching it, and there's caravans like destroying each other basically on this like dirt oval, and it was, that's my first memory.
I thought you were going to say that you set yourself on fire or something. Sprinkler.
Honestly, I would not put it past
me. Is it a sprinkler?
Yeah, like a spring.
It's a sparkler. Oh, a sprinkler.
Sparkler.
And I'm nodding.
I thought it was called a sprinkler.
Like a sprinkler's like if there's a fire.
Yeah, I knew I got it wrong. I was close to a sparkler. So I was waving my sparkler around watching these caravans have a demolition derby, basically.
Nice.
That's cool.
Okay, mine's not quite as exciting as that. I just remember Schumacher, you know, on the TV and taking a really keen interest in him. My parents or my mum always used to say that or says that I used to cry when he didn't win. You know, whether that's true, I don't know.
Happen often then.
You know, so that's, yeah, I just remember the Ferrari red and Schumacher. I don't have any specific. I remember going to my first Grand Prix probably when I was about six and sitting vaguely sitting on that old Formula One straight, you know, like the Foster's signage, that kind of Formula One time. But so that's probably my earliest memories.
I just want to add as well to that is I've spoke to her mum before about it as well, and she said that at the British Grand Prix when she went to watch and Michael broke his legs, she would not stop crying the whole day because all she wanted to see is watch him race, and on the first lap he was out of the race. So she was crying the whole time.
I hope that I had the whole sympathy of the entire grandstand.
Oh my god.
That's brilliant. Do you feel like motorsport chose you, or you chose motorsport?
To be fair, I think I chose motorsport because I did, you know, like little girls, you know, you go horse riding, whatever. I did actually ride horses at one point. I did that with my mum. And I decided, actually, I'm not a fan of this. And then I chose to go into motorsport, basically. Like, it was all, you know, my own decision. And my dad, you know, let me choose, essentially, what I wanted to do. I actually started on a quad bike and before I did stuff on a go-kart. And yeah, I chose it. I think it was a mix. It chose me and I chose it.
Did you ever fall off your quad bike and hit your head?
No, but you know my sister? You know how, like, driving Miss Daisy she is? She's a lot older. She's 4 years older than me. So she was 12 at the time, probably. And she drove it into a fence going about 2 miles an hour.
No, I just wondered if you happened to hit your head at any point during your life.
Well, probably.
And that's why you chose motorsport.
I don't remember it, obviously.
I would say motorsport probably chose me because, you know, I had no connection to motorsport at all. Like, unlike Abby, you know, with her her dad into motorbikes, there was no reason. My grandfather, he loved Formula One. He used to go and watch Formula One races, but, you know, I was such a young age that probably 2, 3, where I apparently took an interest into motorsport. I wasn't to understand that he was going away watching, you know, the Grand Prix and all of this. You don't understand that. Well, not that I definitely wouldn't have two and 3 years old. So I would say it probably, you know, chose me, actually.
What made you go in a car?
I think my granddad took me to a local go-kart track. It was actually called Kartex near Grove, in Grove. So it's next to the Williams factory. So I remember that. I think there was an old Williams car in sort of like hanging from the wall in there or something like that. So that's one of my first memories of going go-karting. I just wanted to go back every day, as much as I could.
I was the same.
Even if it was a school day.
I was the same.
And the guys that were running the kart track said to my granddad, you know, you should look at trying to go outdoors because she's pretty quick, you know, beating some of the adults and some of the other kids that are coming along. And then we sort of, you know, bought a secondhand kart, went and ran it ourselves. My dad's a builder. My granddad worked as an engineer in the RAF, so we didn't have any idea about setting up a cart, but we used to just go along and with a little trailer, a secondhand trailer, and just went and round this little track in Reading and come home. And then sort of, you know, got joined a little team, and then it sort of went from there.
What would you describe your current roles as? Which is ridiculous because it should be racing driver, but you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, no, hopefully I can still say racing driver. I've not got anything sort of sorted for racing wise this year. you know, quite a bit of sort of TV work I'll be doing, hopefully some radio work. So I'll be doing still at Channel 4. I'll be doing quite a bit of Goodwood stuff. So I'll be going to the Revival for the first time this year. I've never been before. So I definitely need someone to help with my outfit, because apparently you've got to dress a lot differently than you would go to the normal Goodwood Festival of Speed. What else have I got? F2, F3, some commentary on that, which I really enjoy. Love watching Formula 2, Formula 3. It's such great racing. Helping Abby still. I don't know what I say, unfortunately. I'm not sure. You know, she's got some very exciting racing plans this year in an F1 academy with Rodin Carling. So that's all good. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, the Race Her program with Alpine was properly launched, I would say, yesterday. It was a really, really big part of the car launch. You know, it was basically the car launch and then it was the Race Her. So we had, yeah, young girls standing up on the stage, ranging anything from 11 up to 15, all different kind of nationalities, different backgrounds, and, you know, they're talented girls, and we want to really help and nurture them. And you know, even now, Abby's still on her career, but they especially some of the younger ones, they really, really look up to Abby, which I think actually is quite nice. You know, she's still on the journey, just a little bit ahead, but just to see the girls there yesterday and in their suits with their helmets, they absolutely loved it. And, you know, there's a lot of work that gone on behind the scenes with myself, Julian. We've got ADD management involved as well, and Bruno. Loads of hard work's gone in, and really looking forward to see how we can help the girls. And then we've got the rest of the academy as well. Abby's obviously on there. And, you know, we've got Victor and Jack in F2 and drivers in F3 and down as well. So it's going to be a busy year. I might not have time for racing myself.
Yeah, I hope you can fit it in a little bit. It'd be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Love seeing you on track.
Yeah, it would be nice. Yeah, we'll see. You know, I'm still trying to work stuff out. Obviously, we don't know what's happening with W Series. Yeah, you know, so something else, I'm sure, fingers crossed, will crop up, and I can... I don't mind having no weekends at home in the summer, apart from my little puppy. I have to just take him with me.
You should go go-karting for a little race, you know?
Yeah, I could go for a little go-kart race.
Always, the last go-kart race that I did with Alice, she drove over the top of me, so...
Okay, so this is...
right.
So I was about to say, you know, I don't really kart. Could I join you? No, no chance.
Right, so she was in front of me, and it's a track. The track, literally.
She just couldn't accept that I was ahead of her. That's what it was.
Right, you started in front of me.
You come in laughing because you drove over the top of me.
So I thought, I'm going to... It's, you know, one of those... you might not have had one of these moments if you haven't raced, but...
You forgot where to brake, basically.
No, Abby braked, and I was like, she's braking early. I can definitely brake later. So I hit the brakes, and it's a go-kart, so it just locks the rear. And then it's almost like it slowed down and in slow motion, and I thought in my head, like, shit, I'm not going to stop. So I either had the chance to just cut the corner and take everybody else out or just drive over the top of Abby, or I just chose to drive over the top of Abby.
It absolutely, I still beat you, though, so it's fine. Not in that one race, but overall.
yeah, I can't relate. In the slightest.
We haven't talked about your role, Abby. You've asked the question.
Yes, your role, Abby. Let's talk about you.
I don't know what my role. I guess, you know, I'm obviously been promoted to the Alpine Academy, which is nice. Obviously, I was an affiliate last year, so you know, I roughly have an idea of what I'm going to be doing this year with them, and I'm still going to be going in every day to the gym when I can and things like that. Yeah, racing in the F1 Academy, the first. Inaugural series. Is it inaugural? Is that the right word?
Inaugural.
Series of that, which is really exciting. And obviously it's being run by the Formula One. So looking forward to seeing how that progresses. And I think it, you know, is providing a clear progression, obviously, because I'm with Rodin Carling. You know, they're in F3 and F2. And that's, you know, obviously the aim for me. So it's already got me quite a nice in with that. And yeah, other than that, you know, I've got my own little design business I do in my spare time to be able to pay Alice's rent.
Yeah, otherwise you're out.
Otherwise I'll be on the streets.
Now at whose house, the garden's a little bit bigger and there's a slightly bigger garage. So she could go and live in there if she stops paying rent. She's got the option.
Well, thank you. Spoil me.
then, it's all for you. Hang on, back up though. You have a design business. What do you design?
Well, it's not like, it's just a little thing. It's like a hobby. It's quite hobbyish at the moment. But it's for like helmets and like,
Omega.
I do like, you know, like the bottles that everyone has, the Hydro Race bottles. And I've not done car liveries yet, but I think that's coming my way.
Can I just point out, I don't want to sort of, you know, talk Abby up too much, but she is very, if you haven't seen her page, she's designed my last couple of helmets. She's very good. She should give herself more credit because I think, you know, she taught herself. Using this weird program.
It takes a long time. Like, it's Adobe, so it takes forever to figure out.
But I think you're very good at it. And I always keep saying, you should push yourself more. You just go, oh, no, well.
I've got it as a backup. If I can't end up driving, well, you know, or something, I'll play on my computer all day.
Well, Racing Lives, my podcast, my company, doesn't have a logo. I mean, if you... Could I hire you?
You can organise that. Get a logo. Send her a brief. And if it's rubbish, I apologise.
But the brief will be rubbish anyway, because I'll be like, I don't know what I want. But yes, deal, done. Hang on. To go back to the podcast, now that we've established your roles, what would you say are the biggest misconceptions about your jobs? And actually, I'm going to say jobs because you both have quite a few jobs. You don't do just one thing.
I would say that people don't realise that it is literally like a full time, like it takes up every day of your life. Like people think, oh, it's just the race weekends. And then, you know, you go to the simulator every now and then and that's it. But it's actually like, I thought that, you know, at one point. And then Alice kind of, you know, taught me when she kind of took me in and was like, no, actually, you've got to do this, and this. And yeah, like Alice manages me, but I also do a bit myself. So I'm like my own manager, my own marketing, you know, person, my own social media, you know, whatever. Like, I'll have a diploma in marketing by the end of this, like trying to get sponsors. So, you know, it's, you know, every afternoon I do lots of admin just to raise the funding for the season ahead. So it's, and then in the mornings I'm training at Alpine, trying to get strong enough. And that's going to be, you know, a big kind of point for me and for the future, you know, moving up into F3, it's obviously very physical. So yeah, it can be quite stressful and exhausting sometimes.
I think the one thing that people don't realise is sort of when you go to a race weekend, and you obviously know this because you've been to a lot of race weekends, but it's such a long weekend. Okay, you only maybe go out on track sort of, what, 4 or 5 times, depending on what category you're racing in. But, you know, there's such a build-up to the race weekend. And then there's such a, because it's spread across several days, you know, that adrenaline sort of build-up. Then if you're in hot climates, you've got the heat. And by the end of the race weekends, like, you are so, so tired. Coming back for it, and people go, well, what have you been doing? You only go out like 3 times, or, you know, you're not coming into work today. You know, my dad, he understands sort of sport, but, you know, this, you're not going to work today, like on a Monday morning. I'm like, yes, the race weekend just knackered me. And people don't understand like how tiring a race weekend can be, because it's so busy, and it's more like the adrenaline, because you're obviously, there's a lead up to the race, and then they can be 30 minutes long, they can be 45 minutes long. Obviously Grand Prix are longer, but just then that adrenaline build up that you've got going before each session, even practice, there's adrenaline running, you know, in your body. It's tiring. And, you know, especially I don't like these F1 drivers and the F1 teams now with all these races and having, I think it's mad, triple headers, and I thought that was just a COVID thing, but clearly it's the norm now. You know, it hats off to them and the staff and the mechanics and that are there behind the scenes. I don't know how they do it. Like,
yeah, well, people think that it is just the 30-minute race, like, but it's actually, then you've got to prepare, you know, your hydration, your nutrition hours in advance, and then do the work with the engineer to, you know, make sure that you've got all your points right for what you need to work on for the next session. And it's like, it's not just you go on track for 30 minutes. There's a whole build up to it, like Alice said, and then the adrenaline's going through you, and then the race is done, and you're like, oh, you know, it's over, and it's took it out of you, and then you've got to travel back home, got on a plane.
Yeah, luckily we didn't have sort of too many sort of long haul flights as such, but you know, the whole sort of traveling side of things as well is a big thing. And even when you're not doing the driving, you're doing, as I've experienced, sort of the TV side of things. That's a long weekend too. There's a lot of research that goes in behind the scenes, and a lot that goes on. It's busy. It's but you know, I wouldn't change it. I love it. Maybe the long haul flights. You know, my back. I'm getting old now. Economy starting to hurt my back. I need to try and rack up my points so I can get some upgrades. But
well, I'm paying you enough to stay here.
That's going into the mortgage. We've established that.
Yeah, exactly. And the electricity bills. You're not allowed to turn the lights on. You have to walk around in the dark.
Put extra layers on, put the heating on. We're all doing the same. We know what that's like.
Yeah.
No, fair enough. Yeah, it's a full-time job. And the hours aren't 9 to 5. That's the other thing as well. Yeah. And you do work weekends. So, yeah, definitely.
Exactly. No, it's not.
Yeah, they're big ones. That's a good misconception. I like it. Good one.
I couldn't I couldn't sit at a desk 9 to 5. Like I could do or whatever. I think we're very lucky. Like we're complaining and whatever and saying that we're saying what it is. But we are also very lucky because it is it is such a unique sport to be in, and it's just so much fun. Like at the end of the day, we, you know, are living the dream.
Definitely.
Oh, absolutely. Like we're all still here. Like we're here for a reason. We love it. And again, like I've established two things. I would be appalling at doing a 9 to 5 job, and I would be appalling at being in the same place all the time. Yeah, I also don't do well there. So yeah, no, if it wasn't motorsport, it would be another sport, or it would be another job where effectively you're embracing it with everything you've got, and it becomes a lifestyle. Yeah. That's the kind of people we are. But I love it because it makes for some very competitive, very good people at their jobs. And it's quite inspiring. I love it.
Yes. Definitely.
It's a good environment to be in. I wanted to, I feel a bit silly asking you this. This is normally for a question for someone who's not racing on track. But I normally ask about competition and how do you experience, obviously, being competitive. I think it would be silly of me to ask you if you're two people that are feeling quite competitive. So instead, I'll ask, when did you first realise you were flipping competitive in everything that you do?
Playing Crash Bandicoot. When I was about 4.
That's such a good game.
It's an amazing game. If no one's ever played it, I just remember sort of PlayStation games used to, if I didn't win, my mum's actually got a home video, and I don't know where it is. I've seen it several times, and I am playing Crash Bandicoot I remember the sofa, I remember where the TV was in my first house that I was growing up in. And, you know, I couldn't do this level on Crash Bandicoot. And my dad says something to me, you know, maybe you should do this. You know, so I try it and I die and I just start crying because I've died for the 400th time. Sounds like I cry at everything, but sad films, you know, they get me, but that's about it. And I think I was just competitive. I just wanted to win everything, even if it's a game of Monopoly. You know,
I was thinking Monopoly, like I'd always want to win board games.
It just annoys me, like, you know, I just want to win. So I think it's just from a young age that you know, Crash Bandicoot inspired my competitiveness.
haven't stopped since.
I still have the games on my PS4. Not that I ever play it or have time to play it.
Brilliant. What about you, Abby?
Yeah, to be fair, I'd say quite similar to Alice, really. You know, everything that I'd do at a young age, I was just like, I have to be the best at it. And if I'm not the best at it, you know, I've got to learn how to be better at it. And I think that kind of is carried through to now, obviously. Like, you know, when we go go-karting together, like you say, we're quite competitive. I do whatever it takes to beat each other.
Deliberately crashed over the top of her because I knew I couldn't beat her.
see that's the behaviour that I would have, which is, like, if I play Monopoly, I will be the first person to say, no, I'll be the bank. And I know this about myself. I'm okay saying it. I will cheat.
Monopoly.
I should not be trusted. Yeah. I will find any way possible to win, and I won't have a conscience about it. Which is probably why I'm not racing.
Okay, we know so never
fair enough. Properly with you. Yeah.
That's noted down.
No. Well, don't let me be the bank. That's it. After that, then I'll probably just play normally. And then I'll decide that I probably can't win, which means that I'll just focus on being as disruptive as possible and make everybody laugh, because that's more fun.
Yeah, so, well, I'm bored. Yeah. I'm not playing anymore.
Yeah, yeah. If there's enough fun people around the table, though, no, I'll just make sure I make everybody laugh. I'll just be the joker. Bless me. how do you define success for yourselves? Because that's one thing I learned growing up, let's say, with racing drivers these days, is that I used to be quite naive and be like, unless you're on the top step and winning the championship, there is no success. If I can't cheat at Monopoly and win, what's the point? And actually, the thing that fascinates me is that everybody is very, very good at defining what is the best that they could do in a given situation and then defining success from that. And I admire that about racing drivers so much. So I'd love to know what your take is on it.
I mean, you know, I was like you, like, if I'm not winning, then what's the point kind of thing? And the whole motorsport, if you're not winning, you're not getting the biggest trophy, you know, you're not going to be necessarily leading the championship or what have you. And I need to find a place.
That's a big trophy.
It's literally just stuff everywhere. That, my Zan bought one. That's probably the best trophy.
It is the coolest trophy. Like, I am so envious of that trophy. Like, I hate having to walk in and look at that.
I'm going to place it in your room.
Like, I was in that race as well, so I have no excuse. Like, I...
motivation.
Yeah, that's why I left it there. You know, it's, but I think everybody's at different levels. So let's say you, for example, you start in karting, like the Race Her Girls. So there's a young girl in that who is about 11 years old, Sukmani. You know, she's not done cadets for very long. Maybe this is her second year of doing cadets. And she's racing against boys that are probably in their fourth year of cadets. You know, that have done a lot more track time than her. So sort of explain to her what success is. Doesn't necessarily for her at the moment means that she's got to go out there and she's got to win. She's at a different level to everybody else. You know, she's at her own level. And I think making sure that you have realistic and personal goals, you know, because it can be quite easily, especially in sport, to get disheartened. You know, if you're not everybody can win. Not everybody is going to win all the time. You know, that doesn't matter. If you're Lewis Hamilton, he doesn't win all the time. You know, we've seen that. If you're Max, you know, you're not going to win all the time. So I think having personal goals, and they can change. They could change from weekend to weekend, day to day. I think making sure that you're realistic in what you want to achieve, because, as I said, it can be so easy to get disheartened, you know, quite easily, and then that, if you're disheartened, you're then going to start to go backwards. So I think mindset plays a huge part in that and creating success as well. So making sure that you have realistic, and that's what, this is the same with Abby. And I think, you know, Abby's, she's, there you go, she won't be able to see, she's rolling her eyes at me, but you know, making sure this year that she has realistic targets. You know, obviously she wants to win the championship, she can easily win the championship. She's done no testing so far, so needs to make sure that she has, you know, maybe because others have been doing the Dubai series or whatever, that she may not be on the back foot a little bit by the time it comes to the first race compared to those drivers. So realistically, your target needs to be, you know, to improve in the first couple of races to then bang, be up everywhere else, you know. So it's, I think, making sure it's realistic, and that's what I sort of say to you. You need to have realistic targets.
Abby, you're just going to tell me you want to win the championship now, that's it.
Yeah, everything she said, and yeah, winning the
championship. I think I'm more used to maybe having seen, you know, the boys on the ground, the F1 grid. God, I can't wait until I can't say just the boys.
That'll be nice.
Hopefully we'll change it'll that.
Exactly, hurry up.
Get the Abby.
Oh my god, the day that happens, I'm gonna cheer so loud. I don't care what, where's your first F1 race. If it's Australia, then we'll just both go to economy and just have bad backs, we'll be there to cheer you up.
Broken backs.
Yeah. We'll just fly it early.
So we'll
might let you sit in my seat for a minute.
That's so kind, thank you. Just bring the chocolates at the back, it's all right.
Yeah, the orange juice.
Yeah, that's it, that's the important stuff. No, the thing that I've learned through them is there's a lot outside of your control, and especially in Formula One, it's not the same cars, it's not the same engineers, it's not the same aeros, you know, like there's massive differences. So if you've got your hands on the car and, you know, you say, or you know that the best it can do is the sixth row or fifth row, you've got to come to terms with that and still give the best of yourself. And I've always found that fascinating. It's actually helped me a lot in terms of knowing what, you know, how to set my goals, again, because I'm not going to be on a podium anytime soon, but I'm still competitive, so it's fascinating.
Like you just said, there's so many things that are out of your control. Doesn't matter what sort of series you're racing in. You know, there's things that you can certainly influence. I mean, Abby and I both work with a company called Gazing Performance that look at mindset in a different way, and I think that's certainly started to help Abby, because, you know, you have to acknowledge that you will have defeat at some point. You'll make a mistake, you'll make a different mistake, even if you've learned from the previous mistake, there'll be another mistake that you'll make somewhere along the line. Yeah. I think it's just being honest with yourself but that's a big thing, is, you know, you can't control many aspects of things that are on track, and it's making sure you keep your attention on the things that you can control.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, having your experiences and learning from them, and then next time improving upon it. I think that's the big thing. And you know, I mean, you know, people that end up doing, you know, 20 more races, they've got more experience. So it's as well for sometimes for me, it's trying to get that experience quick, and it's not always easy. But I think if you work hard and you really, you know, put time into evaluating what's happened on a weekend, then you know, it ends up helping in the long run.
Yeah, massively. One of my favorite things to say, you know, when I'm working with younger people coming through, just in my industry, like in my side of the motorsport, you can make mistakes, just don't make the same one twice.
Yeah, exactly.
Come up with a new one, surprise me. You know, I always kind of like, it's nice to like make a joke, but actually, yeah, learn from your mistakes so you don't make the same one again, and then you get to find a whole new load of mistakes to make. It's great.
And you will make a different mistake again, you know.
You have to.
Hamilton,
of course, that's how you progress.
Verstappen's gonna make a mistake, Leclerc will, they're all gonna make mistakes at some point this year and next year and the year after. So yeah,
it's part of being human. It's normal.
Exactly. So,
and then when you get into that state flow and everything just goes perfect, you know, it's all the sweeter. So no, it's brilliant. What could you tell me the exact moment you realized motorsport was not glamorous?
I feel like quite early on, like it, like a karting paddock is not the most glamorous thing. Like there's a lot of like, it's very like laddish. It's very laddish.
I think probably when. I mean, I can't remember a specific time, but if I think back to the non-glamorous parts of motorsport, especially if you go, let's say, karting, is when it's absolutely chucking it down with rain.
Yeah.
You go into the grid, you're soaked before you've even gone out. You've got your wetsuit on, but they're not really wetsuits because the water still gets in. You go out, and especially in the UK, if it's freezing cold, let's say you're at your local, the local track here is Risington, and it's, you know, November, probably 5 degrees, it's raining, your hands when you come in are soaked, you can't move them,
your hair is wet,
everything, the water is in your pants are soaked, and you've not had an accident, but just somehow the water has got in there, and you stand and you're just
you're literally just stood like a penguin, like you're like your dad's looking at you like, you know, how can I help you? But there's nothing he can do.
And then it's there that you realize, oh, I could be sat inside in the warm.
Why am I doing this?
But and then some of the long hours, like if you go a lot further up the ladder in Formula One, for example, and you'll know definitely about these long hours, it's being, especially if it's a hot, so people say you get to go to these lovely warm countries. Yeah, but not if you're running around a paddock. And
that's exactly what I was going to say.
Sweating your bits
but
off.
even in go-karting though, like when it was like, the hottest, I raced on one of the hottest weekends of the year. It was like 35 degrees in the UK. Right. And like, I've got a photo of me and I'm just like dripping in sweat. Like, you know the rib protectors? I had a black shirt underneath my kart suit and I had a rib protector on top of it. And I took my rib protector off and you could see like where it had been, and it was all the salt. all the salt on my black skirt. It was gross.
Basically, Abby's gross.
No, but like it's not a glamorous sport, like you say. It's not like it's hard to not be gross sometimes.
It's true. Do you know one of the first lessons I was someone else gave this to me? It's like you hand down advice, you know, as like people come through the paddock or start the jobs that you're doing. And it was literally always wear a vest top underneath your uniform. And it's not like to hide your bra or whatever. It is literally because you're gonna sweat so much that you need something to absorb so that you still look like you're together in your uniform, because it's not like you're going to have a change of clothes with you anyway. And the amount of times I've come home and my underwear is completely soaked through, my vest is completely soaked through just from sweating all day, and you're like, this is the life.
It is. And you would have been probably at the circuit at like 8 a.m. or whatever it is, well, and then you would have left at 9 o'clock at night and probably not got changed, been on your feet all day. That's the thing I don't get, like my feet ache. I walk like my ankles go inwards. I don't know, that's over pronate or whatever.
I think I do that too.
So my feet always ache.
And so you're flat footed as well. So it's like flippers.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you can choose your own shoes, you've got hope. But obviously, again, if you're in uniform, then you're provided with trainers that, you know, with the team partner. So then that gets tricky as well.
Yeah, basically we've just really not sold it to anyone. They're thinking, do you know what?
I was going to say, everybody should join.
There are glamorous moments.
But we're still, obviously we enjoy it, because like you said, we're still here.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Like, I'm now the master of my own destiny and I'm still showing up. So, that tells you something, doesn't it? And I sweated so much in Abu Dhabi last year. It was horrific. And I was wearing my own clothes, and I was like, oh my god, it's so rough.
At least you could just randomly go and change outfit into something else, unless you've got loads of team kit tops when you work for a team. It's a bit more difficult.
I feel like at racetracks sometimes, especially at the hot countries, there's a lack of air conditioning. Like, there is a severe lack of air conditioning.
There's either no air conditioning, or you go in and it's bloody like
it's
the
It's too
Arctic.
Cold, yeah. It's like one extreme to another.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I always bring my jacket to the hot races, and it's for inside, not for outside. Yeah, definitely. But yes, everybody, you should definitely join motorsport. We know that. There's another one that's a bit on the sort of similar note, is how do you actually, we've established that it's pretty much a lifestyle. So how do you work-life balance effectively? How do you find the balance between trying to rest as well, which for you guys is really important because you're athletes. And but also actually still seeing your families and your friends.
Hello. The puppy has just gone, I'm the work balance.
He knows. He's going to
jump up on the sofa. We've just totally interrupted the podcast now.
I feel like it's real.
Whether you keep it in.
He's so, oh my God, he's so big now.
I know. Say hi. He's just wandered down.
I'm not
like,
interested. Oh, I'm just cuddles.
Join in.
Wait. Oh.
You see my fluffy pajamas. I'm still in my pajama box.
Brilliant. Oh yeah, but we've got puppy shouts now. We're happy.
Oh,
he's the perfect hot water bottle.
He's been asleep for ages. Right,
God bless him.
Sorry, you've interrupted us.
Yes. Work-life balance.
Well, now I have a puppy.
It's her life.
Yeah, he is my life now. Sod everything else. No, I mean, it's... Do you know what? I don't know the answer to that question. I think trying to be organised is the big one. If you're not organised and you don't have a routine, everything just goes out the window, basically.
Yeah.
You know, making sure. So if you come back for a race weekend, you need to make sure your kit is washed straight away. You need to clean your bottles out. And then, you know, you have your weekly plan, you have your calendar. I think just got to make sure you're being organized and you know what you need to do. Because if you turn up home and go, oh, what now? Oh, I'm just going to sit for a bit. As much as you want to after a tiring race weekend, making sure you're organised, and especially with Herbie now, taking him to my mum's a lot when I'm not here.
I've got Herbie bum in my face.
That's a good way to make sure you see your mum as well, though. That's nice.
Yes, obviously not just to drop the puppy off at my mum's. But yeah, and I think just making sure that you see family and friends, because if you've had a sort of a rubbish weekend, whether it be from racing or just a stressful weekend from working in the paddock, because it can definitely be stressful, just making sure you chill out, have that bit of time to have a sneezing fit, sorry. And yeah, making sure you spend time with family and friends,
yeah,
and sort of get back to reality a little bit, because working in motorsport can be this like different kind of crazy world, as you know. So yeah, making sure that you sort of come back to reality, breathe, refresh quite quickly, especially if you're working in Formula One. And then off you go again.
Okay, well, you're answering the next question then, which is, what is your proudest moment so far, and did you get a chance to celebrate it?
I feel like I have quite a few.
Oh, wow.
No, but like, I mean, I just feel like there's so many things that I don't ever want to forget. Like, I never want to, like the Barcelona, being on the podium at Barcelona, that was, I think, probably one of the most enjoyable times I've had on a podium, basically.
Not when you won your first British karting title.
I'm getting there.
That's the most memorable one.
No, but like being being on an F1 weekend, spraying champagne, massive champagne bottles. Also, my first time driving a Formula One car. That's a big moment that I never want to forget. That's huge. You know, it was like, I never want to forget that feel. Hopefully I'll feel it again, but that feeling of that just raw straight line speed was just insane.
I'm jealous because I want to drive Formula One.
She doesn't let me ever forget about it.
You've not driven, because Alice, you've driven everything.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to Oz, who runs the test team at Alpine, and he has said to me numerous times, mate, we'll get you in a car. I'm like, well, put it out, Oz, because it's still not happened. So yeah,
surely next time there's a demo. Yeah,
exactly.
And then the other one is karting, winning my first and second British karting championship. That was very
double
special.
Karting champion, like, thank you.
At the time, that was like all I had my mind set on. You know, I was like that. Like, if I've won that, then like I'm the best. That's what I thought at the time. Probably a bit.
Well, you are, because you won it. So.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean. In karting terms, I'm waffling now. So there you go.
No, that's all right. But you make a good point. It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's like, that is all you wanted to achieve. You achieved it. Now I'm the best.
And now,
and actually, that feeling lasts maybe like 10 seconds, and then you're like, what's next?
Yeah, exactly.
Or now I have to defend it.
Exactly,
yeah.
That. So
for me,
not driving a Formula One car, at least then.
Yeah, that's going to be my one. What, when, if it happens,
I think you deserve to. I think it's cool, by the way.
When you get
it's really cool,
one,
by the way.
Just have a go in yours.
Oh, yeah. Just put my helmet on. And, well, actually, just don't put it in the wall at Miami, yeah?
But, like, joke. I mean, we can joke forever about this stuff. And, of course, we can tease you. Like, how have you not driven a Formula One car? You've literally driven everything else. But at the same time, it would actually be really interesting to be able to have your feedback. Because you have driven so many different things and driven them competitively, I'd love to know what you think of what a Formula One car is like and how it handles. And...
probably that my head will fall off. I haven't trained my neck for a couple of weeks. So, I know it'd be incredible. And hopefully one day I'll get the chance to do it. But, you know, I'd say my proudest moments, as Abby sort of said, there's a few. I'm quite similar. Probably winning my first championship in cars back in 2010. You know, it was a weekend that I had a fuel leak just as qualifying started. So I only made it out for the last sort of 10 minutes of qualifying.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the team did a great job to fix the car up and I just made it out. And then it was one of those weird weekends that it was almost like it was meant to be because I was just so full of confidence and sort of in the zone. If people say the zone, what's the zone? I hate people saying in the zone, and I'm just one of those that said it.
No, but there is definitely
like,
a zone.
Yeah,
there is
like
a zone.
Bubble, and everything was just nothing was going to stop me, basically.
Yeah. It's a cool feeling.
Definitely is. And I would probably say winning the British Grand Prix W Series in 2021. Obviously, I think, was that the first.
That was
the time that crowds were sort of back at
yeah, it
Formula
was because it was huge.
Like
yeah,
and I just remember like the fans were amazing, and I will always remember it sort of going around Loughfield after the race.
It.
I sort of lifted my visor up, and you could just like hear the crowd, and it was just so like weird because we're just sort of drivers driving. We're not Formula One drivers. We're nobodies, but in a sense, like, but they were cheering sort of us and cheering the fact a British driver had won and everything. And I think that is another really, really cool memory. And something that will certainly stick with me forever.
I know it's the home crowd for you guys, and that's always special, but I think British fans genuinely are really special at motorsport events. At Silverstone, it's always like a highlight of the year.
It's amazing. And if ticket prices obviously are getting more and more expensive in Formula One, doesn't matter where you go these days, but if anyone has not been to the British Grand Prix, definitely suggest trying to save up and go, because it's just an amazing event. And you know, it's great crowd. Sandvoort is another awesome crowd. I'm working at Monza this year with Channel 4, so I'm looking forward to going to Monza, because my last time I went to Monza for a Grand Prix weekend was 2012, so I remember that being awesome crowd as well. So no, it's the fans just make it, you know, at the racetracks. It's amazing. And I just hope that Formula One hopefully sort of control some of the ticket prices for the fans, because they're so accessible.
Yeah.
And you know, the diehard fans don't get sort of driven out because they can't afford the price of tickets. And I always remember like being as a kid so excited to go to watch the race. For some reason, I just wanted to sit on the home straight. You know, that's probably the most boring place to sit, but I wanted like seeing the pit stops and the podium, try and get close to the podium, and going on the track at the end to collect little balls of rubber and tear offs and all that rubbish that would fall off the cars. And I think that's what it's about, you know, making sure that we can still inspire and have, you know, make memories for young kids, boys, girls, teenagers, adults. There's my bit about ticket prices. Not that was ever a question.
No, but it's a fair point and I love it. I hope we can find ways to make sure that you know, that's always accessible. I think it's important. I always like to flip the coin, and obviously we've just celebrated the biggest moments. Would you have a low or a darkest moment that you've, you know, managed to come back from, but that you experienced through motorsport?
Ours are probably similar, aren't they?
Yeah, they're
running out of funding.
Yeah, that's a big one, actually. I think a lot of people in motorsport sort of face that. Obviously, I stopped racing 4 or 5 years before W Series came along. I mean, obviously losing the championship in 2021, you know, it just was a rubbish weekend at Austin, one of those, had quite a few problems with the car, you know, in qualifying and in practice. So really hindered the weekend. Again, stuff that was out of my control. But even then, sometimes I think if it is out of your control, it can sometimes maybe make it worse because it's just frustrating. Just wasn't meant to be. That was a tough one. Certainly a tough one because it was, well, me and Jamie came in level on points. So, yeah, that was certainly a tough one. Yeah, the funding side of things, but that's just, that sounds weird now. It's almost like it's just the norm. Sounds really bizarre. So it's not something now that it's like, that gets me really necessarily upset. I know with you, it can still really sort of get to you and grate you, Abby, but with me, I've sort of experienced it for a long time now. So it's almost like, I hate, is this the norm kind of thing?
Yeah.
Which it shouldn't be, but it is. And yeah, there's probably other ones and I've maybe erased them or blocked, put them in a box somewhere in my memory.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I would say for me, actually, my first real big disappointment was actually in karting. My first year in the juniors, I was vice champion, but I lost it by a point or 2 points. And it was, to be fair, it was a brilliant drive from the other guy. He got taken out in the final and he drove back to finish just in the points to get enough. And I think I was on the podium or was like, I was second. So like there wasn't much more I could do, you know. I finished second. Probably should have tried to win it a bit better, but and yeah, rookie year, lost it in the final a few points, and it was really heartbreaking for me. It's so close, so maybe more motivated for the next year, obviously. And then like Ellis touched on, it was the funding, losing funding halfway through 2021. Or just running out of it, essentially, and not being able to finish my season in British F4. It was really like heartbreaking at the time because I was a bit lost. But I think one thing, like, you know, if I was, you know, I had W Series then, you know, they put me in for Zandvoort, which, you know, I was so thankful for. And, you know, not, you know, if I was a guy, you know, they wouldn't have had that extra kind of, that little, you know, pullback and that really, really saved me through my final half of 2021. Ended up having a really good kind of comeback, you know, put it on pole at Austin, and it ended up, like when one door closes, another opens, essentially. That's always how I look at things. So
I think in the moment, though, that can be hard to...
In the moment when I had to have the conversation with my dad, you know, like we had already had a few conversations, like, you know, a few rounds prior, like, you know, we started to struggle. And then, yeah, that weekend I had a crash with another driver, and it was like it's tip, like it's, yeah, non, you can't do it anymore. So it was hard. I just, I was very emotional. Probably people from that weekend are probably like, she was a wreck. I'm embarrassed about it. You were in like Budapest or something.
No, I wasn't. I was in Amsterdam. Just before Zandvoort, and then
that's right.
I remember me, Sarah, Abby, and Jess. Sort of Sarah Moore, Abby, and Jess. Sort of said, right, I think we might have actually helped contribute or something like that to your plane ticket to get her out earlier, and just be like, come on, we're having a few days in Amsterdam before the race at Zandvoort. And then you had not bad weekend.
So I was supposed to fly like on the Thursday or something, but I literally flew like the day after my race weekend because they just wanted to like all cheer me up, basically, because I was just so heartbroken. So it's nice to have them people around you when you're in, like, I definitely mentally wasn't in a very good place. Like I was like really, really just, no, like I couldn't see the positive in anything, even though I was going race again that weekend. Like I had my heart set on British F4 and racing in that. And I just was,
it's a knockback. It's tough. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, exactly. Look how far you've come since. So it's, I love what you say. If another door opens, you know, as one closes, I think that's a good way to look at things because it pushes you to look for the positive. We've been quite negative on a few things. Well, I've made you be negative by asking you some tough questions. So I would just like, what do you love the most about motorsport, please?
I think it's just a huge, like, even though there's rivalries, like obviously, like, you know, we're rivals on track, Mercedes and Ferrari, you know, rivals on track. It is a huge family. Like, everyone at the end of the day, they do have a lot of respect for each other, and they're all there for the same reasons. You know, everyone wants to win and everyone's doing it, you know, as best as they can. And I just love that, and the teamwork that goes into putting, you know, cars on track, and also the speed and, you know, things like that, and the memories. It's literally like a lifestyle, you know, it's people's lives, and I think it's a beautiful sport in that sense. Like, there's so much emotion behind it.
Yeah, no, I'm similar to Abby. I think it's just one big family, but also the fans. Like,
yeah, the
touched
fans,
on with,
yeah,
with the British Grand Prix, you know, with the home Grand Prix, and you have that home support, you know, that's why I think it'd be great to go to make sure. I think maybe we do go to, like in Formula One, have a race at every nationality's home. I suppose Bottas doesn't, Guanyu Zhou don't go to China anymore, but just so they can experience, like, home fans, because there's nothing like racing in front of your
Logan has home. Three races in America. He's got three home races. He's a very spoiled boy.
You know, having that experience of your home Grand Prix, as much as it's a manic weekend, especially for those racing in F1, but just having that experience of the home support is amazing. So the fans really, really make a huge difference, and meeting all the fans and the support they give you on social media, even though sometimes I hate, especially Twitter, can be a horrible place. But, you know, it's got its positives, and I think sort of the fans definitely make it when you have, you know, some great fans.
I can't believe this. I've, like, literally got three more questions to go. It's been really nice chatting to you guys. So here we go, top three. The one I really always love to ask, because I always end up learning something. What advice would you have for someone who wants to be part of motorsport in whatever shape or role, you know, is accessible to them?
Oh, you go.
I was going to say, I'm waiting for her to go, you go first. I've going to probably say it better, and then you're going to just steal it. Okay, Abby, I'll help you out this time. I'll go first. I would sort of say, if let's say you're in the UK, there's Girls on Track, but Girls on Track is around, spreading sort of across the world now, but, you know, there's a lot of people think it's just sort of the driving side, but, you know, as you know, there's lots of other areas within motorsport. You know, there's, I don't know how many people work at Enstone. You might not even know this. It must be about
it's 700 to 800 at Enstone, and then there's an additional 400 back in France, and then
just to make two cars go around the track. That's not just. There's not 700 drivers that are working at the factory. Definitely not. You know, there's so many different roles that play such a key part. And, you know, if driving is not for you, if you go-karting to your local kart track and you go, do you know what? I don't like this. It's making me feel sick, or it's not for me. It's too fast. It's too close to the walls. Then there's so many different areas you can get into, and hopefully schools will start to push sort of engineering and STEM subjects. And don't be afraid. Like, if someone wants to take the mick or say, you know, what are you doing that for? Especially to girls, because I know it has an effect that sort of on young girls, sort of say, why are you going into engineering? Why would you do that? Then who gives a shit, basically, if they say that? You know, you do you be you. Engineering plays a massive part, and it doesn't mean that you've got to be geeky and know, you know, algebra and all that, well, you know, stuff that I certainly don't understand. There's so many different bits that go into engineering, whether it sort of be the mechanical side, you know, getting your hands dirty, or sitting designing the cars and what have you. There's so many roles, and I just think if you want to do something, if you want to go into engineering, or you want to go into the design side, like Abby did, she taught herself, if you want to go into the PR side, do it, because you know there will be a role for you in motorsport that will fit you. Doesn't matter what you're interested in.
You could be a chef and end up in the paddock.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite role, actually. Alpine, we always stop and have a chat. They're brilliant,
lovely.
You know, they play a huge part to the factory life, and you know, people sometimes just go to the canteen to go and have a chat with, you know, we sometimes do, go and get a hot chocolate or what have you. You shouldn't get hot chocolate, but I don't drink coffee. you know, from the canteen, just to have a chat. And, you know, the drivers go there and as well. You know, Pierre and Esteban have been sat down in the canteen. It's a family, and every single person in the factory is important. Like I said, even if it's being a chef, and especially if you go to the tracks on a race weekend, you're making the driver's food. You have such an important role.
Make sure you don't food poison them.
Not food poison them. But, you know, giving them the right nutrition.
And yeah, exactly.
Important because you are playing a huge part, because driver nutrition is so important on a race weekend. So, you know, doesn't matter which role you're in, you're playing a huge part.
Abby, what were you going to say?
What she said. Yeah, no. I think as well, like, it's just give it a go, you know. Like, I think try things, even if, you know, you've got no interest in engineering, you know, give it a go and see if you end up actually enjoying it. Or, you know, if you are an engineer and you think, oh, actually, I might want to try driving or something. You know, I know actually a lot of the guys and girls in the factory, a lot of them are go-karters, and they do like a work annual karting championship. I think it's Wilton Mill, I think they do it. And, you know, they've even invited me and Alice along before. We were busy, so we couldn't go to it, unfortunately. But
I'll just go and crash into Abbey.
Yeah, that will literally just be what it will be. But and just have fun, like, just focus on having fun. Like, when I was little, you know, my dad didn't push me to do anything, and it was all kind of my own decision. And every time he'd push me out, even now, if he could still kind of come on the grid with me and everything, he just, you know, last words to me would be, have fun. It wouldn't be, oh, you got to do this. It would be just have fun. Just enjoy yourself. Because when you're enjoying yourself, that's when you're performing at your best, whether it's in any industry, whether it's being a driver or... yeah, engineering, even, you know, being in the marketing or being a lawyer within the team or a chef, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I will ask you the next question, but one of the favorite bit of advice I've ever been given, actually, I got reminded of that by the amazing Anne Bradshaw, who you should always be listened to.
She's hell yeah, favorite people ever.
But she said, take the job seriously, don't take yourself seriously. You know, and it's that thing, it's like, have fun. Like, yes, work hard, but have fun.
Yeah. Like, that woman.
She's amazing.
No one knows who Annie Bradshaw is. Like, she is, probably describe her as the most happy, bubbly, and just amazing person.
Yeah, she's so down to earth. And she's not got a bad bone in her body.
No, she hasn't. She's an absolute legend.
She's so supportive.
She texted me the other day a picture of her dog or something like that, and I was like, Annie, I just miss you. She's like, oh, I miss all my girls.
It was so cute when she went on the podium, didn't she?
Podium.
Yeah, that was serious.
And
that
actually, was awesome. she got upset, but happy upset.
Because yeah, she's like, she got emotional.
Out of all these years working in motorsport, never been invited to go up on the podium. Yeah. And, you know, even when us girls, you know, saw Annie sort of tearing up, we were all like, oh my god.
That was so special. I was there, actually. I got to see that, and I think I just saw it on the screen. I was in the motorhome doing something else, and I sprinted. I've never run for a podium. I sprinted just so that I could catch the end of it. It made me so happy.
Oh,
it's so
amazing.
Good. Love her.
The sport is so great. Like, giving people like the opportunities to stand, like, that, you know, she's been such a big part in the sport, and she, you know, getting that opportunity to stand on the top step, you know, with all us girls, it was really nice.
Lovely. So I was going to ask you, what advice have you received, you know, that you still use to this day, or that you'd like to
don't
pass
crash.
On? Maybe we should twist it to say, what advice has Anne Bradshaw given you? Don't crash. Fair.
What advice? Oh, I think actually, and I you're going to say, that's what I was going to say, and I've actually passed this on to you.
I know what it's going to be.
Someone, I actually think I saw it on something like London 2012 Olympics thing, but it was go out, make sure that you come back in having no regrets.
Yeah, that's what I knew it was going to be.
You know, and I said that to one of the girls sort of yesterday. You know, make sure when you go out, just come back without no regrets.
you know, that don't come back thinking, like, well, if I'd actually just, you know, stuck my foot flat around the corner that I know is definitely flat, you know, then I would have gained this time. You know, that's a regret. Just do it, because at least you know, well, if it went wrong, at least I tried it, sort of kind of thing. So it's probably not the right way example, but yeah. Have no regrets. You've actually got that on the back of
your helmet.
I was about
to say, I literally have that on the back of my helmet.
I'm on the back of your helmet.
No,
that's not. Oh, how cute. I'm making a heart shape. So I've got a really similar one, which is very different, which is leave it all on the dance floor.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, put all your cards on the table. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Leave it all on the dance floor. Yeah. Sounds, but that's what should go on the back of your helmet this year.
Leave it all on
and
the
then back. I can be on the helmet.
Yeah!
Oh, my God, you so should. I'm going to get a caricature of my dog.
I'm going to design it.
Amazing.
There you go.
I love it. Well, okay, this leads to the very final question that I wanted to ask you guys, which is what are you looking forward to this year? So are you looking forward to having a caricature of your dog on your helmet?
Yes.
I'm looking forward to see how my dog grows over the next 8 months.
Oh, that's quite cute, actually.
I've taken a photo of him every week since I got him when he was 10 weeks old, of him next to my helmet. And I'll have to send it to you. The first, this has gone totally off subject. the first picture of him next to my helmet, and he was tiny to now, like, the helmet towered over him, and now he towers over the helmet. Anyway,
something to look forward to for sure.
Yeah, what am I looking forward to this year? Do you know what? I don't really know. There's so many cool
things. Watching me.
Wow.
It's true.
It's true. That probably is. It's going to sound like, but, you know, we've raced against each other and probably been battling and come home and at periods of time not really want to speak to each other because we're having to share a house, talking to each other like, Abby, do this. But it will be nice to sort of be...
That just showed how bossy she is as well, by the way.
She leaves all the cupboard doors open.
I was gonna say, this is a housemate relationship and there's the racing relationship for sure.
You know, I think because when we first sort of started working with each other, it was I was sort of coach and helping Abby, so that'd be nice to sort of go back to that this year, racing in the new championship and seeing how Abby gets on with such a great team with Steph and the team at Roding Carlin. But also for me, just experiencing going to more F1 races behind the camera. I did my first live TV show. The dog's having a big old yawn. I'm clearly that boring. The first live TV show at Silverstone with Channel 4 last year. And I absolutely loved doing the live TV work. Such a like adrenaline buzz. So I'm doing the British Grand Prix again this year, which I think is planned to be shown live here on Channel 4. So I'm really looking forward to that. Because I just loved it. Like, you know, you had to rush to be in your position and, you know, we're like, right, we're live in 3, 2, 1. I don't know, it probably sounds a bit sad, but yeah, I loved doing it.
Yeah,
and at the end, you know, there's such a great team of people that work at the Channel 4 and Whisper. And I just loved it. So that's probably one of the ones I'm really looking forward to this year.
To be honest, I'm just looking forward to, you know, getting back behind the wheel. Like, it's like I'm just missing it so much at the moment. Like, it's like I feel homesick almost in the sense of, you know, being not behind the wheel. Like, I did a shakedown recently, which, you know, shakedown, you only do a couple of laps just to make sure it's working. And I was grinning like it was my first day again, you know. I've not done too much in the last couple of months. I'm just missing it so much. So I really, really can't wait to get back behind the wheel. It's definitely my happy place. And I just want to see how I can improve, work with the team, and yeah, hopefully bring back some good results. Yeah, I can't think of anything else. Also, I think as well, what I'm looking forward to is improving my fitness and my strength. And it's been something that I probably didn't have a good relationship with my training at first, probably a couple of years ago, but I'm really beginning to kind of like dive into it. I really, really, you know, if I don't go to the gym one day, I'm like, I feel a bit lost. So yeah, I think seeing my progression in that as well will be quite exciting.
be amazing. Well, that's the perfect way to close the recording of this episode, because you probably need to get to the gym. So, thank you very much for chatting to me both. I thought it was so much fun having three of us chatting rather than one-on-one, actually. So thank you for making it such a nice experience.
Thank you for giving it a pleasure.
And I cannot wait to see you face-to-face at a racetrack somewhere. Give you a big hug. Oh, thank you, Alice and Abby. That was such a brilliant chat. I think we could have gone on for another hour at least. We covered a lot of topics today, and it was so interesting to hear how they live their lives in motorsport. I can't wait to cheer them on as the season starts. Abby will be in the F1 Academy series this year, so keep an eye on that. And I really hope Alice gets to drive once again. I love seeing her battle on track. I'd like to thank the producer of this show, Press Play Productions. The awesome Tabitha is the one who turns our brilliant chats into the very nicely edited podcast you listen to each time. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe via your favourite podcast platform. Leave a review if you can. Tell your friends. Post about it on social media. The full works. It means so much, and it really helps people find this little podcast. As you know, I read every message and every mention, and it really means the world to me. You can also get in touch directly if you'd like via my Instagram account, which is Pandea. That's Pandea. And there's also a link in the show notes via which you can support the podcast directly should you wish to. Thank you very much for listening, and speak to you next time.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.